Man, am I excited today. It's because I landed one of the big fish. I landed Mr. Richard Syrett, the legendary host from Coast to Coast AM and Strange Planet Podcast. And today, I'm going to get into his life's journey about how he got into hosting paranormal radio shows. And we talk about conspiracy theories, aliens, UFOs, his journey through orthodoxy and how one views the realm of the occult through that lens. We get his take on extraterrestrials. Are they interdimensional aliens? Are they grays coming to save us from ourselves? We talk about, he shares a really amazing story about this unexplainable paranormal experience he had with his late rock historian friend, R. Gary Patterson. Then we talk about AI and how the future of AI looks for humanity and what this could mean. Then we talk a little bit about Elon Musk, a continuation of our disagreements we had on Coast to Coast AM, if you heard that episode. And then he gives us his sage advice on how to avoid going black pill. So take a listen to this interview. He's an absolute legend, and man, he's the best. And if you, while you're listening, check out the links in the show notes. You can go to strangeplanet.ca, because he's in Canada, right? Not com, CA. So go to strangeplanet.ca, and you can sign up for his free email newsletter while you're listening, and you can find the jump offs to his YouTube and check out his podcast. I've done several appearances on his Strange Planet podcast and Coast to Coast AM and so on, which, by the way, if you want to check out those specific episodes, if you check out the link in the show notes, I created a new web page where I'm cataloging all the appearances I've made over the years. I'm still working on compiling all of them. I've got most of them on there, but I've got all of the Richard Syrett interviews that I've done with Coast to Coast AM, as well as Strange Planet, including my recent appearance on Unexplained with William Shatner on the History Channel. That's right, your boy's on TV. What's up now? What's up now? So check them all out. Without further ado, here's our guest of honor, Richard Syrett. Today, we're joined by Radio Royalty. He's got the golden voice you've heard on Coast to Coast AM, 5 seasons of the television show, The Conspiracy Show, and his podcast, Strange Planet, in the Rock and Roll Twilight Zone. He's got years of experience researching and discussing topics covering the spectrum of UFOs, aliens, the occult, and the paranormal. He's one of the most respected voices in alternative media, and today I get to finally interview him and pick his brain. Welcome to the show, Mr. Richard Syrett.
Hey, Isaac. Great to speak with you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on here. You know, I've done several of your shows, and this is, we're switching hats here, so you're a much better interviewer than me.
Oh, no. I have to say, in all honesty, you are one of my favorites, and you're one of my listeners' favorites. That's why I've had you on so many times. I like to use an old hockey metaphor, being from Canada. You always put the puck in the net. You always deliver the goods when you come on the program. So wow. I appreciate you.
Jeez, thank you. I didn't expect that. That made my day. Because like I said, you're a legendary figure in this realm of. Wow.
I don't know about that.
Oh, I know about it. You're being humble. Yeah, this is quite an honor. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here is because I know how there's several people that, like Greg Carlwood, is a podcast called The Higher Side Chats that I've done several times, and he interviews people just constantly, right? And I got to think, you know, because my podcast is mostly just me talking about my research. And I think it's fascinating how guys like you have been interviewing guys like me for so many years. And I got to think that you're exposed to way more information than I am, in the sense that I have my own biases and my own sort of filters of the world and my own belief systems. And I think there's value in guys like you who have been exposed to a wide variety of every opinion you could think of. And I really want to sort of just get a rough idea of how these things get internalized by you and how all of this sort of formulates an opinion in your mind. And what I wanted to do was start out with your, you know, I know that this is, we don't have all day, but I want to know your life's journey. I want to know, how on earth did you become a person interested in these taboo and fringy subjects? When did those seeds get planted? Does this go back to childhood interest? Maybe take us on a journey of how you have gone down this path.
Well, I'm a child of the, I was born in the 60s, but I'm really a child of the 70s. So, youngest of five kids. I spent a lot of time watching television. I grew up watching Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of, and there was a program that Rod Serling did after The Twilight Zone. It was called Art Gallery, or Night Gallery, my apologies, Night Gallery. And The Night Stalker, and I watched reruns of The Twilight Zone and so forth. So I guess that was always in the back of my mind. I never set out to, you know, host a radio program dedicated to conspiracy theories or the paranormal or UFOs. I mean, it was always an interest. Professionally, I mean, I got into talk radio. It wasn't even my first choice. I was intent on getting into television documentaries. In fact, I'd interned at a TV documentary production house. And then just something popped up, as it often does. I got a call from a classmate. Hey, they're hiring over here at this talk radio station. And so I just kind of fell into it and fell in love with the medium. And I got to work with absolute luminaries up here in Canada in terms of talk radio. I mean, the very best, CFRB, AM 1010, has been on the air since 1927. It's a 50,000-watt blowtorch station. Toronto is like the fifth or sixth largest radio market in North America. So I was very fortunate in kind of, you know, starting my career at the top, in the sense that I've always worked in major market radio. And after about 6 or 7 years, I think I was given an opportunity to host. That was the other thing they did there. They hired internally. They promoted internally. They promoted talent. I started off as a call screener and an on-air and an off-air producer. And then I found myself given a late night shift on a Sunday, and I had to figure out, what am I going to do with this time? But I knew I didn't want to talk about what everyone else talked about. And we used to subscribe to a service called the Wireless Flash. Actually came in the mail. All of the producers received a copy, and it helped you to do show prep. And it, you know, there was celebrity birthdays and the astrology, but there were also some suggested interviews for late night radio hosts. You know, hey, you want to interview a Loch Ness monster hunter? Here's his number. Here's his biography and his email or whatever. And so I just started introducing those kind of fringe elements into the program, and it kind of took off. And, the only other thing like it doing that kind of radio was Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM. It was still Art Bell at that time. He was getting close to retirement, I think. And I was a huge Art Bell fan. I mean, how could you not? It didn't matter what Art Bell talked about. He had that kind of voice and presentation skills and ability to, you know, reach through the radio and speak to you as if you were the only other person in the world. And I've always said this, I could listen to Art Bell read from the telephone directory and I would be captivated. And so I loved Art Bell. And certainly I was inspired and influenced by Art Bell. So that those elements kind of took over the show. And then 9/11 happened maybe a year or two later. And that changed everything, as it did for most people. But as a broadcaster and as someone who was starting to sort of look beyond the headlines, it just totally took over my show. In fact, within a week of 9/11, while everyone else was still, you know, sort of rally around the flag and let's invade Iraq or Afghanistan or in weapons of mass destruction, and it was planes flying into buildings, I started asking some uncomfortable questions, and it wasn't a particularly popular thing to do on the radio on a major market mainstream media station, but either management wasn't paying attention, they didn't care, or I don't know, maybe they thought what I was doing had some value. I think it did. So that really was what changed it all. I mean, I went from, you know, talking about the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot And all of a sudden now I'm thrown into this world that everything we think we know about history and reality and the way the world works and who's running the show and all of that was just turned upside down. I was also about that, well, maybe a few years earlier, I was introduced to a very interesting character by the name of Nelson Thal, who remains a good friend to this day, who was a student of the late Marshall McLuhan, Canada's greatest mind, perhaps, communications guru. And in fact, he went on to become the official archivist for Marshall McLuhan and was going to be a PhD student under Marshall McLuhan when the whole program at the University of Toronto was shut down, which was very controversial. It turns out, I later learned that Marshall McLuhan was also studying sort of conspiracies and secret societies. In fact, I think he's quoted as saying that the arts are controlled by the secret societies. And I later learned through my friendship with Nelson Thal that McLuhan, now I just lost my train of thought. Where was I going with that? Secret societies. Oh, yes, that Marshall McLuhan was in contact with a lot of former intelligence people from around the world, whistleblowers and things like that. So this was entirely new to me. Anyway, Nelson Thal also introduced me to a book. I remember having dinner with him one night and he had a shopping bag with him and he grabbed this big hefty book and he put it on the table in the restaurant. And it was Tragedy and Hope by Dr. Carol Quigley, who was a professor at, I think, Georgetown University, taught Bill Clinton and others. And he was sort of blowing the whistle on, you know, the Rockefellers and the secret societies, the Round Table, Arthur Rhodes and so forth, because he had access to the Rockefeller libraries. Actually, he wasn't so much a whistleblower. I think he actually was agreeing with what they were doing, but he, for whatever reason, he felt compelled to let the world know. So that was kind of my introduction. That's a very long answer, but that's how I kind of I got into it. And I've never looked back. I mean, once you drink from that well, you're never really content to sort of go back and covering, you know, city hall meetings and provincial budgets. It just really doesn't matter anymore after you sort of have pierced the veil, so to speak.
That's fascinating. In fact, I have been taking a course with Professor Diana Pasulka, and Marshall McLuhan's name came up several times. I casually know who he is, but I don't know much about him besides the ideas he presented about technology having the capacity to either, you know, make our lives more enriched by freeing up the time for humanity to sort of pursue creative endeavors and things, versus what I think, in my negative outlook, what I think the technocrats are really going to do with it, and that's enslave us or something. But that's interesting. It's sometimes I get into these synchronicity things because I'll have one obscure reference that just keeps popping up on my radar. So I guess I got to really dig into Marshall McLuhan a little bit. Sounds like because you brought him up too.
Yeah, I mean, most people are familiar with his book, The Medium is the Message. But he also had, as you say, he had a lot of things to say about technology, and I'm not an expert on Marshall McLuhan by any means. It comes to me secondhand from, you know, a pretty good source, his official archivist and a student. But he talked about how technology erases identity and violence is a quest for identity. And so technology, I guess, inadvertently leads to violence and the major technological advancements are always followed by war.
Wow.
He back in the 1960s, he basically predicted the internet. He famous for talking about the global village and so forth. He talked about how we are, since the launch of Sputnik, the satellite, the Russian satellite, we have been sort of pulled out of our bodies, really. We are living at the speed of light. We're electronic beings, living at the speed of light. And our, you know, our, because of technology and satellite technology and global communications, we've sort of been, I don't know, transported out of our bodies. You know, we're all sort of bouncing around in the ether out there, you know?
Right, right. And, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
and
it's like we're projecting our consciousness into this digital, you know, internet world. And I feel a bit of that too as a content creator, podcaster. It's almost a, and then on top of that, I use a pseudonym of Isaac Weisheit, which is my real name. Yeah. And it, you get a sort of schizophrenia about you with this, like, I've got my real personal life and then I've got this sort of online life, and they're two different versions, because I'm not that interesting or engaging in my personal life. People are probably, people in my personal life, when they find out I podcast, they don't really talk to me about it, which I don't know if I should be comfortable with that or not, but I don't bring it up and they don't talk about it, and they probably think, who, this guy, he's so laid back and quiet, like, I can't imagine he talks to, you know, about podcast stuff. But yeah, I'm totally with that, with the technology sort of changing who we are. And I want to, later on we'll talk about AI, because I do think that that's a huge component of this revolution that we're sort of witnessing. I don't know. I'll pick your brain about that here in a minute. But I want to ask you about the, this is kind of a more personal question maybe. Mm. So feel free to tell me to shut up, but I want to know how your spirituality sort of filters, because, like, for me, I'll start with my sort of perspective. Me I call myself a lukewarm Christian, because I'm not a good one, but I'm an Orthodox Christian, and I believe, I just, you know, I was really hardcore for, when I first found Orthodoxy in 2003, I was hardcore for a solid probably 15 years of, you know, didn't miss church, read every book. I was really into it, and it kind of petered out, and it's not that I am jaded by it or against it or anything. I just kind of fell out of practice, and now it's like, okay, it's a core belief of mine, and that's kind of where it is, and I try to live my life as a Christian the best I can. But when I study all of these paranormal, occult, conspiracy topics, it really starts jumbling up the works in my brain about what's really going on and such. So I'm curious how your experience of spirituality playing into all of these sort of dark and taboo subjects, how do you sort of navigate that?
Well, I'm also an Orthodox Christian. I married into the faith.
Oh, same as me. Yeah.
I was raised in the United Church, which used to be called Methodist. And it was, I mean, I had in many ways, an idyllic childhood, you know, and I wanted to play hockey. So I played in the church hockey league. But the deal was, if I wanted to play hockey for the church, I had to sing in the choir or I had to go to Sunday school. I did both. And it was wonderful sort of fellowship. But looking back, it was high in fellowship, not a lot of worship going on. It was a great sense of community. But then, and then I married my lovely, mighty Aphrodite, and I not only fell in love with her, but I fell in love with her faith, and I was chrismated. I'd already been baptized, so I was chrismated into the Orthodox faith because I wanted to share sacraments with, we were planning on having children, and we had two boys. To cut to the chase, I'm constantly conflicted by the topics that I present on my podcast, and I've presented on various talk radio programs on different stations. It's been different incarnations of the same sort of, you know, the conspiracy show, Conspiracy Unlimited, Strange Planet, and Coast to Coast and so forth. But it's a challenge for me. I am constantly conflicted, but I cleave to the faith. I'm not someone who can quote scripture chapter and verse. I have kind of a childlike faith, I guess, really. Just some might call that naive, or some might call that, you know, unsophisticated. I trust in the Lord, And, you know, I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and nothing else really matters. I mean, as long as I think you believe in the birth and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, the rest is really details. But for me, I love the mysticism of the Orthodox Church. But it's a lot of the things I talk about and you talk about, you know, whether it's the occult and the paranormal. And I just got off recording a podcast earlier today about Carlos Castaneda and, you know, sort of navigating the liminal realms and alternative realities. And earlier this week, I was talking to people about DMT entities. I try to provide a very respectful and safe platform for people to come on. It's not an argumentative type of program. So, you know, reincarnation, that's something else. I don't subscribe to reincarnation. Some people believe that it was in the Bible and it was taken out of the Bible. I don't believe there's any evidence for that, but still, I mean, people come on and they talk about that, but I'm conflicted, Isaac. Yeah. And the deeper I get into the faith, the more I'm conflicted. I don't know, maybe I'm in the wrong business.
there's something to be said there. And I think that it's a double-edged sword for me, because I'll research a lot of these topics and I'll see some validity in some of the occult arguments, and I'll have to sort of just have the faith and research, okay, what's the ortho, like for Gnosticism, for example, they think we live in this prison planet. And at first I'm like, oh, that's crazy. But then the more I dig into it, I'm like, I don't know, maybe that's not so crazy, because the whole idea is that, I think it was Iapetus or somebody was sort of hired by the early church in, you know, 300 AD to do a disinformation campaign against the Gnostics to make sure that flavor of interpretation of who Jesus Christ was didn't become the mainstream Christianity. And I think, well, that is kind of weird. But then I have to sort of go through the people that have spent way more time researching this than me, and that's like the church fathers and the Orthodox sort of dogmas and literatures, and say, okay, well, they've already crossed this bridge hundreds of years ago, so I guess I just gotta have the faith that their version is correct. But if you hard pressed me on it, I'd say, man, it really just comes down to a belief, and I don't know the answers. So it's really hard, because the more you research these things, it's the more those seeds get planted and you start questioning, like, well, maybe it is a big control system in a way. So that's interesting that you brought that up. The other side of that, sort of the other side of the question, I'd like to know what you feel about extraterrestrials, aliens, UFOs, UAP, whatever that is, because that was one of the things that got me into this realm growing up in the 80s and 90s, was I was fascinated by the topic of aliens, and I didn't realize there was a spiritual component to that. I just thought it was a they exist or they don't kind of thing. And I'd like to know what you think. You've interviewed so many guests that are researching this thing intensely, and now we're living through this strange moment of possible disclosure that's coming any day now. Maybe, who knows? I know that's a big open-ended question, but what's your sort of view on extraterrestrial life?
Well, first of all, I have to say, It never ceases to me to amaze me, the hunger, insatiable appetite for this subject for listeners, whether it's the podcast or Coast to Coast. People cannot seem to get enough of it, despite the fact, you know, they've been talking about disclosure for, I don't know, 20 years or more. I enjoy talking about it. I mean, there are different, you know, so many different facets, whether we're talking about the, you know, abductions, or we're talking about crop circles, or we're talking about UFO propulsion systems, or the whole disclosure, or exopolitics, how, the ETE reality is impacting, you know, geopolitics and so forth, underground bases and reptilians. It just goes on. It's never ending.
Right.
But again, I hope this isn't a turnoff for people, but for me personally, and from time to time, I will sort of divulge my biases, and I put everything personally on a personal level. I put everything through my faith filter, and so it's no different with the UFO ET issue. As far as I know, there's nothing in the Bible that denies 100% denies the existence of other, you know, races or entities on other planets. But it doesn't, the only way it makes sense to me, based on my faith, is that they're not extraterrestrial, they're interdimensional, and that is in the Bible. And that's the spiritual aspect of this. If we look at these incursions, and we look at Genesis 6 and fallen angels and the Nephilim and so forth, it makes sense then from a biblical standpoint. A lot of fans of the UFO genre or whatever you want to call it are not happy with that, because it has sort of become a religion on its own, all on its own. Mm-hmm. Those people that see extraterrestrials as, you know, the, knights, white knights coming to save us from ourselves and taking people on board their craft and showing them videos or movies of, you know, how we're destroying our planet and we need to raise our consciousness and join the, you know, Intergalactic Federation or whatever they call it. And I'm not trying to be flippant here. I mean, these are their sincere beliefs. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense to me, but I'm not going to stop, you know, allowing those people to come on the program and talk about it. I have an audience that is hungry for that kind of information. That's, you know, that's what they want to hear. So I give them what they want to hear. And from time to time, yes, when appropriate, I think I'll offer up my perspective, which again is a biblical one, that these are interdimensionals. And there is a sizable camp that believes that as well, that we're talking about interdimensionals. If we're talking about the angelic realm, it makes sense. You know, there are demons, there are fallen angels, and then there are the good angels, if you will, the messengers of God. And they've been interacting with humanity since forever. So it makes sense from that point of view, if that answers your question.
Yeah, that's great. There was actually one of the first times I listened to Strange Planet, I think you had two episodes, and I can't for the life of me remember the name. There was these two guys, I want to say they were brothers, and they were more in the Christian camp, and they talked a lot about the occult and aliens, and I think they're the ones that got me onto Tom Horn's research. And they talked about the Watchers and the Nephilim and stuff. I can't remember their names, saved the life of me, but
It does ring a bell. Let me just
Farley Brothers. Does that sound familiar? The Farley Brothers or something like that?
No, there was. I was thinking Justin Fall.
That's it. Fall. Yes. It
might be F A U L. And yeah, his brother. They made documentary films.
Yes, that's them. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I casually listened to the episode forever ago, and. I never was able to figure. I'm going to write that down. The Fall Brothers. They because I even bought one or two of their documentaries. They were really good. But yeah, they were great guests. They had fascinating information.
Yeah, they talked about Jack Parsons from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and his association with Aleister Crowley and using the same kind of ritual with Babylon Rising type ritual out in the desert in 47, supposedly opened up this portal. That's coincidentally perhaps when the whole 47 UFO flap started. Then he dies in an explosion at one of his labs. And without you know, closing the portal and the speculation. This is what led, because it wasn't just a UFO flap in 47. I mean, people were seeing and having all kinds of very bizarre encounters and experiences in 47. It wasn't just, you know, Roswell and the Aztec UFO incident. I mean, there was a whole host of paranormal things that were going on. We always focus on Roswell, but, you know, it's a great question. Was that all tied to Jack Parsons? And I think L. Ron Hubbard was involved as well. Yeah, it's a fascinating a chapter for sure.
I really feel like that is the core thing that this goes back to. And I had interviewed Dr. Jacques Vallée a few weeks ago, and you know, there's two guys that I think understand how the occult works with technology and aliens, and that's Dr. Jacques Vallée and Peter Lavenda. And you know, because Dr. Vallée basically was part of the team that created ARPANET, which created the internet. He's been researching UFOs forever. And when I talked to him, in my assessment of what he was telling me, me reading between the lines of what he's saying, I think what he was saying, he refers a lot to occult ideas in his new book, Forbidden Science 6. And he talks about alchemy and all kinds of stuff. And I think what he was trying to say is that if we want to understand the phenomenon and UFOs and what this really is, we have to go and look back at previous practices that may have been shunned or dismissed. And I believe that he's talking about occult stuff like alchemy, even ritual magic and so on. And I think that this goes back to like that whole idea of the Collins elite, which I believe is where the Fall brothers were talking about all of these things.
Yes.
And there's not a lot of people that are talking about it, because when I was researching for my UFO books is when I stumbled on it, because I was like, okay, yeah, these guys are onto it. Like not too many people talk about all these connections. And I think that when it comes down to it, I think that there's occult practices being done to garner knowledge from these entities. And from there, I don't know how that fits into the world of the nuts and bolts people that believe in UFO crashes, but Dr. Jacques Vallée and Paula Harris wrote a whole book about the 1945 Trinity crash that happened, you know, right after the atomic bomb got detonated, which opened up the riff. And then, you know, then you have Parsons doing all the rituals of the Babylon working, and then the 47 Roswell crash. And I just think that there's something there, and I think that it's tied into occult practices. And I don't know. Yeah. I'm just throwing that out there.
No, I agree. And it seems to me, it's been a couple of years since I interviewed Jacques Vallée, but he seems to be, based on sort of titles of books and conversations, snippets that I've heard, coming around to the idea. I mean, I think the word deception is used in one of his book titles, talking about the alien agenda and deception being involved, and along with another alien abduction researcher, David Jacobs, also increasingly talking about the deception. I mean, what is the alien agenda? Now, David Jacobs is, I don't believe he holds religious views, but he does believe that the agenda involves a human alien hybrid program. Essentially the end goal is to colonize Earth, to take over, the planet through this program. And Nick Redfern is someone else, popular UFO researcher, author, who's sort of come to this conclusion as well. Now, I don't know if Vallée is entirely come over to that camp, but again, he seems to be, at least to my mind, I might be wrong, but moving in that direction, sort of as a response to this. I mentioned, you know, ufology becoming this religion where you know, the Raelians and people who really buy into this idea that, you know, ETs are here to save humanity. They're going to solve all of our problems. They're going to provide us with free energy. And if people that are abducted by aliens, which to me just sounds, you know, like just absolute barbarism, poking and prodding and abducting children. The response from the UFO religious crowd, if I can use that term, is that this is a contract we've made in a prior life. So this is where sort of the convergence of, you know, reincarnation and New Ageism meets ufology. A lot of people actually believe that there is nothing wrong with abducting children, aliens abducting children. This is a contract, a soul contract that we've made in a previous life. I mean, I just can't countenance that idea, but that's out there.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. And there's an element of this that I think, because I tie a lot of my research into pop culture, because, I grew up watching lots of television and movies, and I, you know, still enjoy all those things to this day. A lot of people get turned off by that. A lot of people get upset, and they say, well, if you're finding all this symbolism and, you know, demonic activity on these movies, why are you still watching them? And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I still enjoy them. It just is what it is. And I can't help but think that the pop culture stuff sort of directs us and our line of thinking. And I don't know where our fantasies and imagination starts and where the reflection of reality happens. For instance, you know, Jack Parsons and Wernher von Braun, they were really into these science fiction tales about, you know, us going to Mars and things like this. And that inspired them, and they really built rockets. And, you know, I personally don't think that we put a man on the moon, but there's, you know, they were able to sort of launch these massive rockets, and there's space station out in, you know, synchronous orbit. So, I mean, there's elements of that that really manifested as reality. What do you, you know, you had a podcast called Rock and Roll Twilight Zone talking about pop music, or rock music, I should say. And, so you've got some interest in, and I know we talked previously about, you're interested in Frankenstein, right? Like you enjoy Frankenstein. I do too. I'm a big Universal Monsters fan, which, you know, as a child, I grew up, I was like terrified of Frankenstein. I used to have this recurring nightmare about Frankenstein for whatever reason. And I would see, there's a term for it, but I would see like I could see my dad's chair, and he would have like, he would put his like work uniform on it. And in the middle of the night, I would look over there and I could see it. I always thought it was Frankenstein looking at me. Right. And, growing up and as a researcher now, I say, oh, like it's a whole story about alchemy and man becoming God and stuff, you know? So maybe take us down the path of pop culture and your interest. What kind of pop culture were you into, and how does this play into, the research for today?
Let's see. I was, from my earliest memory, I was into, you know, the what do they call them? The four D's, Dylan, the Doors, the Dead. That's three. What am I missing? Anyway, Dylan, the Doors, the Dead. I was out of sync really with, my generation, because I sort of came of age in the early 80s, and everyone was into, you know, Duran Duran and Spandau Ballet and all of that stuff. And, I was into classic rock and music from the 60s and the psychedelic era. I guess because my older brother and sisters, you know, they had quite an album collection. And so that was what I was fed, and that's what I gravitated towards. And then the Rock and Roll Twilight Zone, that came about because, through, was it the Conspiracy Show, or I forget what the name of the show was, back in the CFRB days. I was doing a late night show talking about all of these things, you know, paranormal conspiracies. And I met R. Gary Patterson, who was a rock and roll historian, and he kind of wrote the definitive, book on the whole Paul is Dead legend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think it was called, was it called Paul Was the Walrus or something like that? Anyway, so Gary, our Gary, I called him Gary. He became kind of a semi-regular on the show, and he wrote like an entire anthologies about all of these, rock myths and legends and curses, you know, Leonard Skinner and all, you know, dying in this horrific plane crash in the late 70s, and all of, you know, the 27 Club, all of these musical icons that died at 27, you know, Brian Jones and Jim Morrison, and or did Jim Morrison fake his death, and did Brian Jones really drown, or was he murdered, and on it went. It was such a rich vein that we decided to do. We were going to collaborate and do a terrestrial radio program. It was going to be called The Spirit of Rock, and we spirit kind of a play on words, spirit, the paranormal, and so forth. We talked about that project almost every day for about 2 years. We were pretty close to landing our first station. Our idea was to build kind of a network. We were going to syndicate this show called Spirit of Rock. We had produced a pilot. The first one was about Jimi Hendrix and whether he was murdered by his manager, who was former MI6. And we had Jimi Hendrix, former road manager, the late Tappy Wright, on the program. And he claimed that the manager, was it Mike Jeffrey? I think his name was Mike Jeffrey, Hendrix's manager, had confided in Tappy Wright that he had murdered Jimi Hendrix for the insurance. So we produced the pilot. We were a couple days away from meeting with the management at a radio station in Knoxville, Tennessee, because that's where Gary lived, near Knoxville. That was going to be our first station. And then I learned on Coast to Coast AM that Gary had died.
Oh.
But the previous, that was a Saturday night. The previous, it was announced on Coast to Coast. I slept through it. Usually I listen to Coast to Coast. My wife, the mighty Aphrodite, and I usually stay up and listen to Coast. For some reason that night, I slept through it. I missed it. So I woke up the next day and I got a Facebook mention, I think it was, or Facebook message from Dave Schrader, who was one of the guest hosts at that time, telling me, he said, "Hey, I know that you and Gary were close. I just wanted to let you know in case you missed the show last night. Gary passed away yesterday." And I didn't believe it because I thought I had a fairly lengthy telephone conversation with Gary that night. It was a Friday night. He called me. I remember seeing, you know, his name up on my, you know, when the phone rang. I don't answer the phone unless they're in my contact list, and his name came up, our Gary Patterson. And that had that all familiar Tennessee drawl, and he was such an affable, lovable person, always upbeat and positive, and always saying supportive things about me. And we were talking about our project, and he mentioned to me that the meeting that we had scheduled for the management at this radio station in Knoxville about our radio program had to be postponed because it was the Memorial Day weekend, and so Monday was going to be a holiday, and I completely forgot about that. And he said a couple of other things that were kind of, at the time, I thought, well, that's unusual, but that's just our Gary. He said to me at one point during the conversation, "You know, Richard, you're a really cool dad." And I thought, okay, well, I'm not sure where that's coming from, but, you know, thank you. And then he said something. He said, "You know, Richard, you and I are a really big deal." And I thought, well, that's just Gary's way of, you know, trying to boost our morale as we're trying to launch this project and so forth. And then I asked him, I said, "It's Memorial Day weekend coming up." I said, "When I think of Memorial Day in the United States, I think, of course, the parades, but I also think of family barbecues." I said, "Gary, you're going to have a barbecue this weekend." And for the first time in the year, all the years I had known Gary, he got kind of sharp with me. And he said, "There will be no barbecue." Huh. And I thought, oh boy, did I just step in a landmine or something? Is there something going on with his family? He just said, just like that, "There will be no barbecue." And I just kind of let it go. And it's, this is going back to 2017. The details are getting a little foggy, but I remember wandering through the house with my cell phone to my ear. And I would just suddenly find myself in a different room and not realize, it was like I was walking in a dream or something. I don't know. And at one point I walked through the kitchen and my wife was in the kitchen with my brother-in-law. He was sitting at the kitchen table. They saw me with the phone to my ear, wandering around in the house. And then anyway, the phone call ended. I don't even remember exactly how it ended. I know it was kind of on a sore point. And then the next day I learned that Gary had passed away. So I ran upstairs. The mighty Aphrodite was just getting out of bed, getting dressed. And I said, Gary passed away. Gary died. I just learned on Facebook. And she said to me, weren't you talking to him last night? I didn't prompt her for that answer. She just volunteered it. She said, I saw you on the phone and I figured it must have been Gary because we were always talking. And so I went down to the funeral. I'm making this a very long story. I apologize. But I went down to the funeral. I flew down to Knoxville. And then from there, I went to his little town. And there's Gary in his open casket with his, I think he had a Fender guitar. He was a wonderful musician. In front of the casket, and there was his older brother, Mike. I went up and introduced Mike, and he said, oh, Gary spoke of you often. Thank you for coming all this way. And I didn't want to tell him about the phone call, but I had to know. I said, what time did Gary pass? And he said, oh, it was about 5 o'clock. Well, that night when I talked to him, it was well past dark, I remember. And this was May, late May. So it doesn't get dark up here in Toronto until probably past 8 o'clock. Anyway, One thing I neglected to mention was I looked on my phone, the morning after he passed away, and, you know, you can go to recents on your phone and find out who did you call, outgoing calls. Nobody called me on Friday. There were no ingoing or outgoing calls. There was a call from Wednesday from our Gary Patterson. I remember talking to him on a Wednesday. There was nothing on the Friday when he died. I talked to somebody.
Wow. That's fascinating. I think that those kinds of paranormal stories, because I've got a couple too that are just unexplainable. And I think it's like sometimes that veil gets thin and, you know, there's no way to like prove it when it happens sometimes. So that's interesting that would happen. So what was the next move after that? Did you just proceed with the project on your own?
It took me a few weeks to think about it. What would Gary want me to do?
Yeah.
And I decided, one of the last interviews, I think it was the very last interview that Gary did, talking about his books and rock mysteries and so forth, was with Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho, the famous it used to be called the WEW World Wrestling Federation. And then they changed their name. Anyway, he a famous wrestler, but he's also a musician. He became a podcaster. And so Chris Jericho had interviewed our Gary Patterson the last time, just a few weeks before he died. And it was Chris Jericho who was on Coast to Coast that night to announce with Dave Schrader that Gary had passed away. Again, I missed the show. So I reached out to Chris Jericho and I said, I was a good friend and partner with our Gary Patterson. And we had this project together and I'm thinking about now doing a podcast, and Chris had a podcast network. He said, well, I'm going to be in Toronto in a couple of weeks or a couple of months or whatever it was. Why don't we meet? So I met him down at the Royal York Hotel and told him about the idea and he loved it. And so I produced about 40 episodes of I renamed it the Rock and Roll Twilight Zone. Partnered with, it was the Jericho Network, and it became kind of a documentary style podcast. It was a hell of a lot of work. I'm very proud of it. I think Gary would like it too. I think he would have loved it actually. But that's how that came to be.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm sure he's grateful for following through on that. I'm watching a show on Netflix called, I think it's called Pantheon. It's like a anime show, and it's interesting because that segues into my sort of last question I've got for you. Well, second to last question, then I'll let you go. Because in the storyline, it's about AI and this this guy that's able to successfully upload his mind to a sort of digital matrix thing, and he's able to communicate electronically with his wife, and he calls his wife. And that just made me think of that, which takes me to my next question for you. And you said something when you had me on Coast to Coast recently, you said something that kind of blew my mind, and I've been thinking about it ever since, because we were talking about AI, and you said something to the effect of how, well, we didn't really have a choice with AI. It's just kind of rolling out. And I thought, that's interesting. I guess I sort of drank that Kool-Aid of me just being an insignificant person and just like, oh, this is just what they do. And you're absolutely right. It's this thing that we're told by the greatest minds and the tech elites that, on the one hand, they're like, oh, this is going to kill us and it's going to be the end of humanity. But in the next breath, we're rolling it out with no limitations. And I just sit back and I say, oh, well, that's kind of scary. What do you think the future holds for us? And how's AI a component of this? Is this kind of one of those inflection moments that they're telling us is going to happen? Like, what do you perceive?
Yeah, just to follow up on our conversation on Coast, for those who missed it. Yeah, we were never let in on the conversation. Do you want driverless cars? I mean, think about the job displacement. And we talk about the robot apocalypse, ha, 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 and the singularity and so forth. But there was never any discussion, as far as I know, in the House of Commons and here in Canada or on Capitol Hill in Washington. Do we want driverless cars? Do you want robots serving you hamburgers? I mean, think about the implications. Something like, what is it, 1 in 5 jobs in the United States anyway, probably similar up here in Canada, are tied to driving a vehicle, whether we're talking about taxis or Ubers or limo drivers or truck drivers or school bus drivers or et cetera, et cetera. Think of the job displacement. And it's not like a recession or even a depression where eventually, you know, those jobs come back. We're talking about millions and millions and millions of jobs, and they're not coming back. I mean, I think AI holds a lot of promise. It's the double-edged sword. I think AI could solve, or cure eventually most diseases. It could solve resource scarcity, but then I look at the unchecked development risks, you know, creating a world where humans essentially are obsolete, and we have to ask, are we playing God? Well, not, we're not playing God. Somebody's playing God. I'm thinking of Genesis and the Tower of Babel. I don't understand AI. I'm trying to play catch up here because, you know, I understand a little bit about ChatGPT. If I want to do a quick a search, maybe I'll use Grok. We'll utilize AI when we're producing. My son helps produce the thumbnails for my YouTube videos, and he uses AI, and they're terrific. It's amazing. I've seen some amazing videos now, and they're getting more and more realistic. Mm-hmm. Someone did a parody of We Are the World from 1985, you know, with Bob Dylan and Michael Jackson, but now that they're using all of the world leaders, Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu and Giorgio Meloni and Vladimir Putin. It's, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's, I am absolutely enthralled by it. But also, and then I step back and I think, oh my God, it's like John Madden's NFL, that video game. Every year it got more and more realistic. You know, in the beginning it was very pixely. And then it got a little bit better, more fluid and so forth. And now I can't tell the difference between a video game and an actual game. I have to, look really close. Mm-hmm. So this is where we're at with AI right now. I shudder to think where we're going to be in, never mind 5 years, how about 6 months? Mm.
I agree. I the videos is the videos is the thing that really makes me wonder, because I've seen, like I said, within 6 months, I've seen the AI generated photos and videos improve so much that now I'm a little bit terrified, and I'm worried that this thing's going to sort of disrupt us too much, too fast. And yeah, I'm not sure what to think of it, but quick question. You mentioned Grok. Did Elon Musk let you back onto Twitter yet or what? An X?
No, which is kind of a head scratcher because I, like many people, I was absolutely, I was in such a celebratory mood when he took over Twitter. And here I am now. It seems like I'm in permanent Twitter jail, even though they're supposed to be the new champions of free speech. I still have no idea what it was I did, except that I did post some videos very critical of globalist Mark Carney, our new prime minister up here in Canada. So I don't know. We have, you know, we have an ex office up here in Canada, whether someone from the Liberal government picked up the phone, who knows? Who knows how that happened? Huh. But no, I'm in permanent read only mode on X.
Oh, I see. So you can still, okay. And I tell people, people ask me how the coast to coast thing went. I said, you know, we had this fun little exchange because it turned out Mr. Syrett is an Elon Musk fan. And I was critical of Elon. I thought that was fair because I mentioned how Elon Musk questioned something about, you know, how empathy is holding us back or something as humans. And you corrected me, which was a fair correction. I think I did. I thought when I first found that thing that within the context it was accurate, but then you reread the context to me and I thought, you know what, like I think you've got a fair point. Like I think I do, so, and this is my biases and my sort of like tunnel vision of like paranoia about the tech elites and the world's richest man kind of stuff. And I think it's interesting but you're an Elon Musk fan. Is that true? Like what do you think that he's got good things in mind for us or
again, the word conflict has to come up. I am conflicted. I mean, you've opened my eyes as well. When we were talking, we were talking about the Dark Enlightenment on Coast and also on my Strange Planet podcast, which I encourage everyone to listen. Either if you're a Coast insider, go back and listen to the episode with Isaac or on Strange Planet. You really opened my eyes. I mean, I appreciate Elon Musk's. I mean, he's so audacious and although now I'm learning things about, you know, whether is he actually the guy that's doing this or did he just kind of take the credit for it? You know, he's been called a fake and a fraud. Everyone is a fake and a fraud apparently these days. I don't know what the truth is. I do have an admiration for him. I certainly liked, at least on the surface, what he was attempting to do with the Department of Government Efficiency. Well, some other people, I think maybe even you pointed this out, was this all an attempt to access data to get back in some way against his adversary over at OpenAI, Sam Altman, or Scam Altman, as he calls him? Well, I mean, was that really the motivation here, that it was nothing to do with, you know, making government more efficient and reducing the budget reducing the debt? It was about getting back at Sam Altman from the get-go. So I don't know the answer to that is. I am also conflicted by Neuralink. I mean, this is something that they say it keeps me up at night as a cliche, but it does bother me, you know, building this brain computer interface to conceivably merge our minds with AI. You know, it's pretty bold and it's almost mythic when you think about it, something out of a sci-fi epic. But I mean, I'm thinking about, imagine curing paralysis or restoring vision or unlocking new levels of human potential. I mean, I'm drawn to that. I really am. But it also comes with a serious caveat. I mean, who controls that chip? Who gets access to your thoughts, your memories, your consciousness? And you know, the potential for surveillance, for manipulation, for straight up dystopian nightmare scenarios. I mean, that's off the charts, the potential there for bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm conflicted by it. Yeah, what if these implants get hacked?
Right. And that's what one of the topics in the Professor Dana Pasalka's class that I just wrapped up was how AI is sort of forcing us to question what does it mean to be human? And we're sort of looking, and I agree. I think that's beautiful. The idea of people who are paralyzed being able to walk or to see again. Like, I don't know that we should stop that. Even with the negative side effects, I just don't know. It's interesting time to be a philosopher. I'm sure there's so many things going on with that. And in fact, I'm planning on writing a book about the Dark Enlightenment. And but the problem with that is my research keeps growing as to how many books I need to read. And I've got two on my desk right now that I'm trying to hack through. And then my friend Jamie Hanshaw messaged me some interesting excerpts from the book about Elon Musk. It's a massive, 600-700 page book about Elon Musk. It's kind of the most famous one, the biography of him. And so now I've got to add that to the list too. So I the jury's out for me and Elon Musk. I tend to label him evil, and that's like my fear of techno elites and ultra wealthy people that is why I think that, but there's room in there that I could be wrong for sure. So, well,
yeah, I mean, you certainly opened my eyes. I have to give you credit there. But the other thing is now, his mad rush to, this backup plan for humanity and, the rush to get a colony on Mars. What does he know that we don't know? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. One last question that I'm going to let you go. What do you think? So the thing I like to talk to, and you're a great person to ask this question to, because I try to talk to my guests who know so much. And when we're navigating this crazy world of conspiracy, it's easy to go black pill, meaning your negative outset and outlook of everyone. And this is what contributes to people who are like, oh, you need to, burn all society to the ground. And I think that goes too negative sometimes, but it's hard because you talk about, when we talk about these subjects of conspiracy and interdimensional aliens and Satan and all these things, it's easy to become too negative and be scared and fearful. And I don't think that's the right answer. I try not to sort of put that into my listeners either, because I don't want to make people's days worse or make them full of fear, even though these are very real fears and concerns. Do you have any advice on how we can sort of stay focused on researching these topics, yet not go too black pill?
That is a challenge. I really compartmentalize my life in that regard. And typically, I'm not, at the breakfast table with my family talking about these things, unless they bring, I have twin boys who are 18, unless they bring it up. But it's important to sort of build that firewall between what I do, on the podcast or on Coast, and then the rest of my life. I had a terrestrial radio show up until recently that was entirely different. It was news and politics and the culture war and so forth. But occasionally the two worlds would collide. Because, today's conspiracy, give it 6 months and it's tomorrow's headlines, right? And so a lot of what I used to talk about on the conspiracy show, the deep state and all of that, that's just, that term has just become a cliche. Everyone's talking about the deep state now, or the globalists. 10 years ago, nobody used that term in mainstream media. So the worlds are colliding. But what I found, I had to step away from that show in part because, things up here in Canada are pretty bleak. We just reelected a Liberal government after 10 lost years. And the prime minister we have now is arguably worse than the previous one, except he's worse in that he's probably smarter. He's a former banker. So I was almost blackpilling myself. I thought I have to step away from this. Again, I'm going to come back to my faith. You ask me what prevents me from being blackpilled. I think the Bible offers a lot of hope. I have to look at this chaos in terms of, it's not random. It's part of God's sovereign plan. I always say, I've already seen the movie. We know how it ends. The good guys win. In the meantime, we're being called as Christians to be watchmen. to discern the signs of the times, share the gospel, shine a light in the dark, offer hope, you know, to a world that's kind of spiraling towards control and deception. And we have a choice, really. We submit to God, or we surrender to man-made systems. And, you know, again, we know the end of the story. Christ wins. But until then, we have to resist tyranny. We have to defend truth, and we have to ultimately, I guess, trust in God's providence. So the future is fraught with challenges. But it's also an opportunity for faith to shine. And, in the meantime, again, we have to navigate AI and globalism and surveillance and attacks on freedom and, you know, ultimately, we have to anchor ourselves, for me personally anyway, in scripture. Mm.
Beautiful advice. I agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I that's why people get upset and scared about, what about the digital matrix? And I think, well, you know, I think you just gotta, have your faith wherever you find it. And for me and you, you know, it's orthodoxy. So, thanks for sharing all this with me. I one last thing. You're all over the place. You got Coast to Coast, you got Strange Planet, and you've got this really cool newsletter called Inner Sanctum. Mm-hmm. Tell people where they can find more of Richard Syrett.
So, the best thing to do is to visit the website, strangeplanet.ca. Not .com. We're up here in Kanuckistan in Canada, so it's .ca, strangeplanet.ca. If you go there, you can see my most recent podcast, you can stream all of the podcasts from there. We're up around 1,220 episodes, I think, now. And you can subscribe from there. You can become a premium subscriber, which basically is commercial-free listening, and you get some bonus episodes. And you can also subscribe. You mentioned the monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum. That's the official newsletter of the podcast Strange Planet. It comes out once a month, absolutely free. We just did the June edition was all about cloning and MK Ultra and body doubles and so forth. So again, strangeplanet.ca. And for those of you who want to know when I'm on Coast to Coast AM next, all the dates are there on the website as well. Everything right there, strangeplanet.ca.
Perfect. All right. And I'll put those links in the show notes for everybody. I know you're a busy man, so thank you so much for, you know, spending the time with us. And you know, you're a treasure in this world of conspiracy paranormal. You're a legend. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Isaac. I appreciate the opportunity and introducing me to your audience, and I really appreciate you too. You're likewise a treasure, and I look forward to our next conversation on Coast or Strange Planet.
Absolutely. Cheers. What a guy. How can you not love that guy? You gotta love his voice. That's a $1 million voice right there. I can only dream of having a voice that silky and smooth. So I hope you enjoyed that interview. He's a guy I really look up to. I love the guy. Check out his podcast, Strange Planet. I've been on there several times. And like he said, he hosts Coast to Coast AM. And I'll put the links in the show notes, as you already know, strangeplanet.ca, where you can find the link to his YouTube channel, as well as his Inner Sanctum newsletter. And if you want to find my specific episodes, you know how to Google and stuff, you can do that. Or you can go to my website. The link is in the show notes. If you go to allmylinks.com/IsaacW, you can see I added a link to appearances and interviews, and you can find it there with all the other appearances I made on, like, Tinfoil Hat and Donut and all kinds of stuff. So thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for supporting the show. Till next time, stay positive.